Hello, baseball fans. Welcome back to another week and another edition of the Ross Vitorical, episode number 38. Chris Schubert, Matt Goldman here with you. And Matt, what a day we picked to record the show.
Yeah, I guess it was a good thing that you couldn't do it last night.
Yeah, I had to actually delay last night's show. I had some stuff going on with some other work. And I texted Matt and said, can we push the show to today? And he said yes. And I'm kind of glad that we did, because a lot of things happened today that we wouldn't have gotten to last night and would have made our show very outdated. So I think the easiest place to start, Matt, is the trade that happened today between the Cubs and the Mariners. Mike Montgomery heading to the Cubs in a four-player deal, and heading back to Seattle is minor leaguer first baseman Dan Vogelbach and right-hander Paul Blackburn. Right-hander Jordan Pries is also going to the Cubs in the deal, in that four-person deal. So this is sort of kind of what we expected from the Cubs. They had been linked to Andrew Miller, Aroldis Chapman, so bullpen help had been the thing that they identified as their biggest need heading into the deadline. And, you know, any deal for Miller or Chapman, you know, that started with a conversation of Kyle Schwarber. Didn't seem like that they were, that was something they were interested in, and they ended up going here for Montgomery, although general manager, I don't even know what his title is, Theo Epstein, has said that they're not done, that they are looking to make another move, and that this is just a start. So, Matt, what did you think of this deal? I saw you on Twitter. You had some initial reactions, but you've kind of taken them back.
Yeah, you know, when I first heard the trade, I was kind of shocked. I mean, you know, I understand that they traded two minor league guys, but if we really just look at this as a one-for-one, I thought it was pretty mismatched in terms of the Mariners' favor. And to be honest, I was really shocked. I've been a proponent of trading Vogelbach for the past year and a half. I thought the Cubs would have been able to get Cole Hamels if they'd built a package around Baez and Vogelbach. Obviously, would have needed more in there. But so I always kind of envisioned Vogelbach as being a part of this larger trade that would, you know, kind of be somewhat of a bombshell. So at first, you know, I was really surprised. I thought they could have gotten more, but I looked at Mike Montgomery's baseball reference page only to find that he is a controllable asset through 2021. And he's been amazing out of the bullpen this year. He's got a 2.34 ERA. I'll pump the brakes on amazing. That word kind of came out there. He's not striking out a whole bunch of guys, but he's walking under three, and he's allowing 0.44 homers per nine. So he's pretty much exactly what the Cubs need right now. They've been going through it before the break, but I don't think anyone really doubts the staying power of the Cubs. So adding a lefty reliever who's started throwing the ball pretty hard is exactly what they need. And Vogelbach apparently was not considered. I'm sure you were talking about the same tweet that Theo essentially said that Vogelbach was not one of their top prospects. Which I guess kind of surprised me, but a lot of the Baseball America guys were tweeting about how he really has no place on the field, so he's very limited in terms of where he can play.
To spin off that, he was ranked the 20th best prospect in the Cubs system by MLB.com.
That's also just crazy.
Well, the reason he's so low is not only because the Cubs have a deep system, but because he doesn't have the defensive skill to really put him anywhere in the field. And he's always been viewed as more of a trade bait to an American League team because he's just a bona fide DH.
Right, and I always thought he would wind up in the American League. But it is pretty crazy that, you know, despite Vogelbach's lack of a position, I mean, he's really going to play. He's an everyday DH, and he might spell, you know, Lind at first every now and again. But from what I've read, he's not slated to be an everyday fielder, at least positionally. But how nice is it that you can have a guy who in 365 plate appearances is hitting 318, 425, 548 with a WOBA of 422 and a WRC plus of 156, and he's mashed 16 home runs, and that's your 20th best ranked prospect. So the Cubs have quite a bit of depth coming their way.
And this is a guy that, as Matt said, is going to replace Adam Lind, at least in the short term. They may platoon him a little bit. I think, and this is where I wanted to go, and you may be about to say this, the Mariners now might be able to trade Adam Lind because they have their DH of the future in Vogelbach ready, and it gives them the flexibility to now move Lind. I'm not saying they're going to, or that I've heard that they're going to, but it at least gives them the option to, and that must have been an attractive incentive for making this deal.
I don't think that's going. I really don't think that's kind of what they were thinking, because I'm looking it up right now. But if my memory serves correctly, Adam Lind is the first baseman, not the DH. I believe Daeho Lee is the DH. I'm trying to find his first base. Yeah, in 2016, Adam Lind has started 49 games at first base. So I guess that's a little over half. He's played in 55 games. So he's not playing the field as often as I thought, but I don't think that the Mariners would want to give up, you know, at least half of their first base platoon.
Back to Montgomery for a second. This is a guy that is going to come cheaply compared to the likes of the Andrew Millers and the Aroldis Chapman of the world, and that's maybe why the Cubs opted for this direction. They're going to have to pay a lot of guys down the road, and Montgomery gives them a sort of cheaper option that they can control for a longer period of time. They don't have to spend so much money, or in terms of prospects, spend so much on Miller and Chapman. And Matt, let me know if you disagree with this, but he instantly becomes their best lefty out of the bullpen. I'm looking at it. They have Travis Wood and Clayton Richard. I think he comes in and is their best left-handed option out of the bullpen.
Yeah, I would think so. And I agree. This is the cheaper version of the Miller for Schwarber, Miller for Schwarber or whoever, which, you know, it kind of works out perfectly, because Schwarber is this guy who's kind of not suited to be in the National League. He doesn't play he's really awful in the outfield, and obviously he got hurt that this year, but he's not really a great catcher from what we've read.
And kind of have one of those already.
And you know, at first base is Anthony Rizzo. So Schwarber seems to be just, you know, destined for an AL team, but he's obviously so much better than Vogelbach, or at least projects to be so much better. But Vogelbach was a guy, you know, without a position on the Cubs, without a spot on that 25 man roster. And Mike Montgomery does just kind of seem to be, you know, the C to Miller's A, or, you know, 1-3.
I think this is a deal that works out for both sides. I think it gives,
yeah, I agree,
the Mariners another option, a younger option, a guy that has proven that he can hit at every level. As Matt said, he's hitting .318 right now in AAA. And the Cubs get their bullpen help. Now, I don't think they're done there. I think they may go out and get another complimentary piece. I think this may take them out of the running for Miller and Chapman, although we may hear them link to them as the deadline gets closer. But the price is probably going to be too high. I don't think they want to part with Schwarber in a deal for Andrew Miller or Chapman. I think if they were going to move a guy like that, it would be for another starter to give them more depth there. So they may go with another B-level or C-level reliever as the deadline gets closer and just sort of shore up their bullpen that way. Any last thoughts on this one, Matt?
I mean, I really can't see Miller going to the Cubs at this point. The Yankees pretty much said Schwarber's coming to us, or Miller is not going to you.
Right, and they don't want to do that. That's just not a price they want to pay. And I don't blame them.
You know, I think Schwarber would look great in pinstripes. You know, that short porch and right would do him a lot of favors, and I think it would be fun to watch him hit there. But despite the fact that the Cubs don't really have a spot for Schwarber, his power and just his bat is, at this point, you know, in his career, considering what he did in, you know, his first, what, 40 some odd games, you can't get rid of a guy like that. And, you know, if they have to stick him in left and just tell him to be careful not to run into anyone, I'm sure they'll figure that out. But I bet they're secretly hoping that the National League gets the DH here pretty soon.
Well, when it rains, it pours. And in terms of bad news, it's pouring over Dodger Stadium right now. How do you like that one, Matt?
It was pretty sweet.
That was pretty good. That was pretty. I know, I'm impressed with myself there. And
you
what
need
I'm
to pay
getting,
some time.
What I'm getting at is there's two pieces of news that came out of Dodger Stadium today, or around the Dodgers, that are not very good. The big one, the marquee piece of news, is that Clayton Kershaw may require back surgery. Manager Dave Roberts said that today. And his 2016 season is in question, although Roberts did say that he hopes that Kershaw can come back at some point. And if not having Clayton Kershaw wasn't already the key toward getting another pitcher, the other piece of news is that Alex Wood is going to be out the next 8 weeks after an elbow procedure, and he may not even be ready for the end of the season. So You don't have Alex Wood. You don't have Clayton Kershaw. Your rotation right now looks like Kenta Maeda, Brendan McCarthy, Scott Kazmir, and Bud Norris. And on top of that, I saw a tweet. I don't know who it's from, Matt. If this sparks something in your brain, let me know. That they are not looking to make a minor move, that the team is looking to make a big level acquisition. When I hear that, I think of Chris Sale. I think of Chris Archer. Sonny Gray comes to mind. So it looks like if there was ever the, you know, sort of perfect storm of news to get the Dodgers into action to make a move right away, it seems like today has been that day with Clayton Kershaw not only being shut down, but now potentially needing surgery and Alex Wood being out. Matt, do you think that this is going to be the catalyst for the Dodgers to make that big splash?
I think it has to. I mean, if Kershaw's done, then, you know, they really don't have a frontline pitcher for the playoffs. Alex Wood, you know, wasn't having an amazing year, but he wasn't having a bad year. In 56 innings, you know, he was hurt off and on. 9.91 K per nine, was walking just a tick over three, and he had an ERA under four and an FIP of 3.27. So, you know, he was exactly what they needed too. And then there was also the news that Hyunjin Ryu had another setback with his shoulder, I believe, or it might have been a sore elbow. I can't remember. He's had so many things wrong with him now.
But you are right. He has also been shut down.
Yeah. So, I think this will be the kind of the final straw that pushes Matt Cain just gave up a home run.
Oh, you're watching the Giants.
Yeah, it just made me really sad because I was thinking about how good he used to be, and also, you know, how good Tim Lincecum used to be, but he's just been bad lately.
Ah, there you go. For those of you keeping track at home, Matt got his reference in this week. You were trying to say that this pushes them over the edge.
Yeah, so I think it will push them over the edge, and apparently they were scouting Chris Archer, I believe. But I just wonder if – you can't say it publicly, but is adding Chris Archer really going to save their season or like you said, no. Chris Sale? So, I mean, honestly, for the future of their franchise, they're trying to build a sustainable farm that's been – I would have to say Fried, it seems to have been Friedman's – biggest goal is to, you know, develop these guys from the minor leagues with Peterson and now Seager and Urias, you know, kind of do what the Cubs did. But with Kershaw down, I just really think that kind of puts the end on their season. I just can't see how they would win enough games without him.
So I agree. And I think, you know, getting Chris Archer or Chris Sale or Sonny Gray, whoever, you know, starter you want to put in that box, now that Clayton Kershaw is huge, and they're not going to be able to chase down the Giants or chase down the second wild card spot with, you know, the Cardinals, the Cubs, the Pirates, the Nationals, all those teams in the hunt for that, the Mets, the Marlins. But if I take two pieces of information that we've heard over the last couple of weeks together, they may be able to make a deal for one of those guys without doing what Matt said is trading the farm. And either early in the week or late last week, there's been so much news that I forgot when it came out. But they are not against the idea of trading Yasiel Puig. And I wonder if they can entice a team, let's say like the White Sox, like the Rays, the A's maybe. I don't know if they would take on that contract. But they entice one of these teams by saying, we'll give you Yasiel Puig. This is an MLB-ready, all-star caliber player that can hit 290, hit 300, and be a huge piece of your lineup. And I wonder if that's how they get around depleting their farm system in order to get one of these guys and sort of still have in mind for the future, but while also helping themselves in the present.
I like that. I hadn't really thought of that when we were, talking about this earlier before we hit record. But, you know, they would obviously have to find someone that values Yasiel Puig very highly. And that's not to say that team shouldn't. But with the last 2 years he's had,
he's not the player he was 3 years ago.
You know, he's so young still that player still has to be in there somewhere. And I don't know if he's just, you know, unhappy in Los Angeles. People aren't treating him the way he wants. You know, he doesn't have any friendly relationships. You know, you could guess about a million things, but you might never hit it. But we've seen players, you know, when they get a change of scenery, that player that they once showcased does come back out. To kind of, you know, from the shadows and say, nope, I'm still here. The White Sox makes sense. I don't know if, at least it makes sense in terms of they needed an outfielder and they don't really have any, but, if they really are still trying to go for it in 2017, it's hard to justify giving up Chris Sale for Yasiel Puig. That's probably a net zero trade right there with how much value you're going to lose from the pitching staff and how much you'll gain with Puig, you know, in a best case scenario. But I do like that idea. I hope, you know, just for the sake of the Dodgers, if they do try to go for something, it would be kind of that route, because the Rays said that Archer isn't unavailable, but they'd need to be overwhelmed. So Yasiel Puig's a good start, but he's a long way from overwhelming someone in a trade scenario.
And that being said, I don't think the White Sox are moving Chris Sale. I don't think they're moving Jose Quintana. I think these are two guys they're both 27. They're both on relatively team-friendly deals, Quintana's especially. These are guys that you build a team around. You don't get this type of talent under the perfect circumstances of not spending too much money on them and then just trade them for, let's say, Yasiel Puig, if we take that they would trade with the Dodgers, for example. You know, if they're overwhelmed, if they get six or seven, you know, major league caliber talent in terms of close prospects or prospects that are a couple years away, then maybe. But you just don't do that, especially with what the White Sox did. They traded for Todd Frazier. They've been putting themselves in a position to compete. I think they can next year, and I think trading them, either of those pitchers, would be a mistake. So I think you're really looking more towards the Sonny Grays of the world or the Chris Archers of the world, and those aren't teams that you're going to be able to just steamroll over either. Matt?
No, I...
Do you have the trivia? Do you have the trivia brain on?
Oh,
was my segue. I was off the soapbox. I figured I would switch.
I do actually, because I am going to bar trivia in about an hour.
Are you? Okay. So this is like a little bit of a prep for you,
I guess.
Okay. So Jason Stark of ESPN every Tuesday comes out with Trivia Tuesdays, and we've sort of taken that here on the Roster Rhetorical and kind of put a little bit of twist on it, as I have the page open here, but I don't answer the questions. We test Matt's ability to answer the questions. And Matt, I think you're going to have a tough time this week. I really do.
Okay.
So this week at ESPN, they've been doing their top 100 players of all time, right? They've been doing that whole shtick. Do you know about this?
Oh, yeah, the rankings?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which are not very good. Sorry, no. ESPN, but they're not. But
I mean, when they put Big Poppy on a list of first basemen, you kind of lose me.
Yes. But we're going to have to go here anyway, because this is what the Trivia Tuesday topic is about this week. And that is about the best 100 players in the world of all time. And they have set in the – I will read you what the sort of description is this week, and then tell me if you're ready. With seven batting champs in the hashtag MLB rank group unveiled on Tuesday, it's only fitting for that to serve as this week's quiz, so step up to the plate. So this is all about batting champions. Matt, are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Question one. Wade Boggs was ranked number 73 in the top 100. Rod Carew was number 75. And Napoli Joel, number 67. All won four batting titles in a row. Who's the only active player who has ever won three in a row? Ichiro Suzuki, Albert Pujols, Miguel Cabrera, or Joe Mauer?
I kind of want to go with Joe Mauer, but I don't think that's right. I don't know. It seems right.
Is that your...
Yeah, no, just shush. You know, I'll go with Miggy.
Okay, that's what I would have gone with. You are correct. He's won three in a row from 2011 to 2013. I believe the Triple Crown year was 2012.
Yeah, because that's the year that he met the Giants in the World Series.
Okay. Besides winning seven batting titles, Carew also had five other top five finishes. Which active player has the most top five finishes? Ichiro Suzuki, Albert Pujols, Joe Mauer, Miguel Cabrera. So your same four choices, but a different question.
Miggy was good to me before. I'll stick with him.
Miggy, okay. He was good for you there as well. He has eight top five finishes, two more than both Mauer and Pujols. Shoeless Joe Jackson, who was ranked number 69 in their top 100, had a .356 lifetime average but never won a batting title. Which active player entered 2016 with the highest career average among players who have never won a batting title? Victor Martinez, Joey Votto, Ryan Braun, Robinson Cano. So I know two who have won a batting title that I'm taking off this list. Or that I know don't have a high average.
I can't remember if Robinson Cano has a batting title or not. But I guess I'll go with him.
You going with Cano? I was thinking Votto. I don't know why. It was Votto. So Robinson Cano is not the answer. Entering the season, Votto had a .311 lifetime average, but has never won a batting title.
Okay.
So that's...
I'm sorry, Joey.
Two for three. Incredibly, Shoeless Joe also finished in the top five in seven batting races, but still never won a batting title. Which active player has the most top five finishes without ever winning? Adrian Beltre, Ryan Braun, Victor Martinez, Robinson Cano. This
not,
is tough because
I'm not picking Robinson.
How many people pay attention to who finishes in the top five?
I don't know. This is just going to be a guess. Can you read them one more time? Except for Cano, because he was mean.
Beltre, Braun, Martinez.
I'm not going with Martinez. And yeah, I'll go with Beltre.
He just played forever, right? I mean,
yeah.
Correct. He has five top five finishes, but has never won a batting title. Last question. The NL has had 13 different batting champions in the last 13 years, including number 61 in our top 100, Chipper Jones. Can you name the last player to win at least two NL batting titles? Larry Walker, Todd Helton, Albert Pujols, Barry Bonds.
Well, I know Barry Bonds has, so we'll go with that.
Now, just before you do this, it's Coors Field.
I know, but it's also Barry Bonds.
Fair. Okay, so Barry Bonds? That is correct. He won the NL batting titles in 2002 and 2004. Walker won three, so my Coors Field inclination was correct, but they were 98, 99, and 01. So there you go. That's it. Trivia Tuesday. Matt just kind of blew through it this week. 4 for 5 again. Do you feel prepared for later, though?
No, I feel less prepared for that.
You feel like now you're in trouble later? You're not going to get any of this stuff right?
No, it's just that we didn't do super well last week, so we didn't do poorly. We just didn't win.
Okay, last story of the day. And this is one that I had spent a little bit of time before the show researching because I want to sort of talk about this. A report came out today that the Brewers and Indians are discussing a deal that would send catcher Jonathan Lucroy to Cleveland as the Indians are sort of in a bit of flux because Yan Gomes is out, although he doesn't need surgery, so that's good news. He is out 6 to 8 weeks, and not having Michael Brantley, not knowing where he's at when he can come back, may have pushed Cleveland in a position to want to get a hitter, and Jonathan Lucroy feels the catcher situation, and he's a hitter. And that may be the option they go. A later update says that the Indians' main area of focus right now remains the bullpen. So the Lucroy plans may be on the back burner, but something that they may revisit. And that was kind of the point I wanted to make, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this, Matt, because I looked this up, and I think trading for Lucroy in favor, or I guess trading for Lucroy instead of trading for Andrew Miller or Aroldis Chapman would be a mistake, is what I was trying to say. Because you look at the fan graphs of all the hitters that the Indians have, and there are some here that don't qualify because they don't have the minimum amount of plate appearances, but I put it down to zero so everyone's in here. And you look at who they have and who's played on a mainly regular basis. Guys like Francisco Lindor, Jason Kipnis, Carlos Santana, Mike Napoli, Chisenhall, Jose Ramirez, Raji Davis, Tyler Naquin, all those guys. All those guys have WRC pluses either 100 or above. You've got guys like Tyler Naquin that have 157 WRC plus, but it's only played in 62 games. And you have guys like Michael Martinez, who's a little bit below with an 85, but he's only played in 32 games. So you look at their lineup, and you look at the guys that are playing on a regular basis, and there's not a lot of glaring holes. Yes, Yan Gomes had a 30 WRC plus, was hitting 165 on the year when he went down. Obviously, in a place they need to address. If you flip it over and look at their relief corps, and Matt, I don't know if you have this open or if you can get this open, but if you look at who they have in the bullpen, there's not a lot here. Brian Shaw is their guy with the most games. Cody Allen's their closer. He's been really good. Dan Otero's been good. But besides that, there's not a lot of names here. They've gotten to Jabba Chamberlain a bunch, Tommy Hunter, Zach McAllister, Jeff Manship. They need relief help. They need an Andrew Miller or an Aroldis Chapman or a B or C tier guy to plug in here because they have the rotation, they have the batters. This is where they need to address. And I just think that trading their prospects for Lucroy, who they're only going to have for a couple months because he's a free agent at the end of the year.
Could be better. That's not true.
Does he have an option?
He has an option.
Okay. Because I knew – I didn't think he was – I didn't think he had a longer deal. So he has – is it a team option or a player option?
Team.
So it's a team option. So, okay. So I take that back. You would have him for the rest of the season and next season, but you're going to get Yan Gomes back. And when Yan Gomes is healthy, he's been a very good player for you. So it would put them in this weird state of having two really good catchers and not knowing how to split up time with them. They may be better off suited using their assets toward showing down their bullpen with an Andrew Miller or an Aroldis Chapman. Give them that lockdown closer piece that can just, you know, take them to new heights as they try to close down the American League Central. Matt, do you agree with my big monologue there?
I do not.
Really?
No. So
I thought for sure you were going to be on the bandwagon with me on this.
No, you're on it by yourself. Well, unless some listeners are with you. But, I don't think the Indians can really afford to overwhelm the Yankees to move Miller and Chapman. Obviously, I really think Chapman's going to go because he is a free agent. And if the Yankees aren't going to make the playoffs, what good is it having a role as Chapman? Miller, there's really no rush to move him because he's locked up. I think he's got three more years. I think it was a 4-year deal. So he's in the middle of his second. You could have him for two and some change or trade him after the end of the season, hold on to him next year. And if you're still not in it, then, you know, you've got one of the best relievers on a deal for a year and a half. But I don't think the Indians really should go all in on, say, Chapman. And the thing is, if they can trade with the Brewers to get Lucroy, and let's say a B tier, relief pitcher, because they do need to address the bullpen. If they find out in spring training that Yan Gomes is ready to go and he's healthy and he's back to his 2014 levels of production, then you can solve that problem when you get there. You can either trade Gomes or you could trade Lucroy and, you know, get a prospect or two back. So I think, you know, especially with the Indians and their rotation being just so lights out, if they add a pitch framer like Lucroy, that's also a boost to the entire pitching staff. The bullpen's going to get more calls. Guys like Kluber, you know, who's a Cy Young winner, he's going to get better calls. Salazar, Bauer, Carrasco. So I'm on the Indians should get Lucroy train or bandwagon, as we're calling it.
Are you leading it?
I don't know if I'm leading it, but I like it. I thought the trade that Dan O'Dowd proposed on MLB Network to get this done was hilarious. And I think it was a pretty good illustration of why Dan O'Dowd is no longer a general manager.
What did he say? Because I didn't catch
it. Oh, you didn't see this? Hold on. No. I got to find it. He basically said that the Indians so the first part of this would work. The Indians should acquire Jonathan Lucroy and Will Smith, which I like. That addresses both of the issues that we brought up, which is, you know, a catcher and a shutdown reliever. Will Smith could be a closer. I don't think they really need to kick out Cody Allen, but, you know, Smith could be the eighth inning and high leverage guy. But Dan O'Dowd suggested that the Brewers should acquire left-handed pitcher Juan Hillman and right-handed pitcher Mike Clevinger, which doesn't make any sense. I mean, you're getting two of the Brewers' best players that they have to offer, and you're only giving up two players in this scenario, because Hillman and Clevinger wouldn't get it done for probably either of those guys. But O'Dowd, for some reason, thinks that he could get Lucroy and Smith for Hillman and Clevinger. So that gave me a good laugh.
Dan O'Dowd's interesting. They do this where they have the trades, and Mark DeRosa does it too. And I just laugh at some of the proposals that they put out there. They just they bring out these trades, and I'm just like, this just wouldn't happen. I mean, this is not how baseball works. But you know what? It'll be interesting because these are two very different ways that they can go at the deadline, and I think both put them in a better position than they would be today. But I, you know, personally think that the bullpen route puts them in a better spot to make a World Series run than the catcher spot, but both put them in a good position to be one of the favorites come playoff time. So it'll be interesting. We're starting to see the market kind of define itself a little bit, but I think over the next, you know, 11, 12 days, we're, you know, all it takes is one. We've said that on this show before, that one move is all that, you know, you need to really force the floodgates to open and these teams to just go crazy. And if they do, something like this, you know, the Indians getting Lucroy is not out of the realm of possibility. Matt, anything you want to add? Because I will say that because you've already got your Lincecum reference in.
Yeah, you know, I would say that I think the, you know, with the injury to Kershaw, obviously the Dodgers aren't being open about how serious it is because it would affect how teams negotiate with them if they knew that Kershaw was done for the season as opposed to just being shut down for a couple weeks. So I think a couple things, you know, or one of two things could happen, which is the Dodgers go out and get their guy before anyone else has the chance, or other teams start to react to how desperate the Dodgers may or may not be, and they start to make a trade maybe a little earlier than they meant because they want to make sure that they don't miss out on their guy. So I think, especially with this trade, a couple more pieces off the board, I think we'll start to see the deadline kind of heat up, especially definitely sooner than it did last year.
As always, guys, you can listen to the show in a various of different ways. On iTunes, you search the Roster Rhetorical. It's right there. You hit subscribe. You get the episodes as soon as they are published by myself. And then you have them automatically downloaded. Either your iPhone, your Mac, your computer, whatever, wherever you have it, if you subscribe to the show on iTunes, you get them as soon as they are released. If you are not an iTunes user or an Android user, any podcasting app that you have will work as well. You just search the Roster Rhetorical, you hit subscribe there, and you will get the episodes the same way as well. If you are someone that likes to listen while you're at work, on your desktop, or at home, or whatever, two places to do that. BlogTalkRadio.com, you search the Roster Rhetorical. All of our episodes are there, a full library of them. And if you, you know, look at the site, MLBDailyDish.com, at the bottom of every article is the player with all of the episodes, with the most recent one being on top. I think I got everything there. If you want to follow Matt on Twitter, at The Original Bull. If you want to follow me on Twitter, at Chris R. Schubert, I put it at the bottom of every post regarding the show. The show you can follow at MLB Daily Dish, where you can tweet us questions you want us to answer, any sort of thing going on that you want us to cover on the show. So that's going to do it, Matt. Hopefully when we come back next week, we'll have a bunch of moves to talk about. We'll be overflowed with stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's see. It's the 20th now, so definitely ball by the 26th, 27th. I'm sure at least a few moves will have gone down.
Well, good luck in trivia time.
Thank you.
You know, we'll catch in with you next week, and you'll have to give us an update on how that went.
This is true.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time.